Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Worried about scams this holiday season? Perhaps you should be. We'll be talking about that in just a couple of moments. But first, a quick trip to Washington for a visit with the St. Louis Beacon's man in the Capitol, Rob Koenig. Rob, welcome. Nice to talk to you again.
Good morning, Don.
Are you as tired as all the rest of us with all this talk about this fiscal cliff?
Yeah, I think all of us are in a hurry for it to end, but I'm not so sure that'll happen. Apparently, John Boehner and his assistants in the House Republican Party told members today that they may well have to be in session between Christmas and New Year's to try to, you know, finish working on a deal on the fiscal cliff.
You know, I had heard a couple of days ago, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that they pretty much had to have come to some agreement by the 21st in order to have it finalized by the end of the year. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think that's right, because they have to put it into what they call legislative language, which on a massive agreement like this is going to take a while, unless, of course, they do something simple, such as the House passing what the Senate has passed already, which is allowing the tax break to continue for people or families who earn under $250,000 a year and letting it go up for everyone else.
What are you hearing from members of our delegations there with regard to all of this? Anything to report there?
Well, I think it tends to divide along party lines. Democrats like Dick Durbin, Claire McCaskill, still express optimism that some sort of a deal will be cut, hopefully by January 1st, if not by January 1st, within a week or so of when the new Congress comes in, which would be the first or second week of January. At that point, all of the Bush tax cuts will have expired, and it'll be easier to vote on something and say that you voted for a straight tax cut if you're a Republican. Now, the Republicans, like Senator Blunt and the House members, are a little more pessimistic from my discussions with them. They're worried that we're not going to get a deal and will, in effect, go over the cliff, which is, as you know, not really a cliff, but a sort of a series of plateaus, which they'll be, I mean, right away the tax cuts would end. However, it'll take a while for people to feel that.
Yeah, well, obviously you and we will be watching, but it could interfere with your Christmas holidays, needless to say.
That's for sure. I'd prefer that they wrap it up next week.
What does Missouri lose? I know you've done reporting on this. What does Missouri lose if we do go over the cliff and hit a couple of those plateaus?
Well, depending on who you ask, and there are numerous assessments of what Missouri and Illinois would lose, the defense industry, which is fairly strong in Missouri, would certainly feel the brunt of what's called the sequestration, the automatic across-the-board cuts that would start going into effect early next year. And because we have the Boeing assembly lines and many other contractors and subcontractors located in the St. Louis region, they would eventually feel the cutbacks. Other than that, the state government, I think, would feel the losses in certain federal grant programs. There would be some automatic cuts, although not in all grant programs. It's a little bit unclear what state tax revenue, what impact there would be. One study says that the state would actually get less in tax revenue if the tax hikes go up at the federal level. However, I think that the budget office in the state says it probably would even out because other income would go up. And then you'd have things like the University of Missouri system, Washington University, which have lots of research grants and other related contracts, would probably lose some of the funding, although that would take quite a while to go into effect.
We talk about a series of plateaus. How long do you know would it take to reach the bottom, the ground floor, if you will?
Well, I mean, the tax cuts, the Bush-era tax cuts would go away right away. So that increase would occur right on January 1st or 2nd, although, of course, you don't feel it until the next year's taxes in most cases. However, the spending cuts, the so-called sequestration, they would they'd go into effect a certain amount each year, and Congress would have plenty of time to adjust those cuts. They were just sort of a trigger that was put in under the Budget Act to try to make sure that some sort of a deficit reduction deal was reached. And, of course, up to today, such a deal has not been reached. So hopefully Congress, even if it can't reach an agreement by the end of the year, can do something quickly in January.
Well, let's move on to another subject now. I think the big story, or one of the big stories since we last talked, was the fact that Representative Joanne Emerson has decided she's going to move on to certainly more lucrative greener pastures. Why did she do that, and why did she do it so quickly after the election?
Well, Congresswoman Emerson says that she was approached by the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association a few days after the election, and she filed papers indicating, I think, that she went into formal negotiations with them on November 19th, and they agreed, I think it was December 3rd, to hire her, which is a quite lucrative job, judging by her predecessor. Others, you know, speculate that she may have been in the market for a job outside of Congress for a while, but I don't know why she would have run for reelection if that were a possibility, say, 6 months ago. So it set off quite a bit of speculation in Missouri politics about who will run. Well, in effect, you don't run for the Republican nomination for the seat because the 8th Congressional District Republican Committee will actually choose the Republican nominee. And speculations focused mainly on Lloyd Smith, who's the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party, and Peter Kinder, the lieutenant governor, who are actually pretty good friends, as I recall. So sometime in the next month, I think the 8th Congressional District Republicans will decide which of those candidates, and there are others also mentioned, would be their candidate, and then the Democrats will come up with someone else.
Of all the lame ducks on Capitol Hill right now, she is a little bit more so, is she not? Because she's going to have to pull back from voting on anything relating to her new job.
Yeah, she has filed recusal papers with the Ethics Committee in the House, basically saying that she will decline to vote on an issue that would directly affect the Rural Electric Cooperative Association. However, some of these, you know, issues like tax increases, et cetera, would only have an indirect impact. And my guess is that if there is a fiscal cliff deal, that Joanne Emerson would probably vote on it because it doesn't have an immediate direct impact on that association. However, she does have to be careful, I think, in how she votes. And, like many other former members of Congress from Missouri, you know, she's going through what's called a revolving door into a fairly lucrative profession. She says she won't actually lobby herself on this job. However, the association has a huge lobbying budget, I think, of $2 million a year or so. And I think they have at least five or six full-time lobbyists on staff. So she will certainly be involved in supervising their strategy.
But cannot lobby personally for a full year. You know, I'm always struck, Rob, by the number of people that we send to Washington who never come back. I mean, never come back to stay, maybe to visit once in a while. Just about everybody who goes there stays.
Seems that way, doesn't it? I think one of the exceptions is Jack Danforth. Certainly Tom Eagleton was another exception. He went back to St. Louis. Dick Gephardt's a good example of someone who, you know, born and raised, went to Southwest High School in South St. Louis and for many years represented the 3rd Congressional District. But now, from what I understand, he has a big house in Sonoma Valley, California, and a condo in Florida, and his lobbying firm, Gephardt Group, is based in Atlanta. So he only comes around once in a while. I think there's still a Gephardt Institute at Washington University, which focuses on public service, and he's in town occasionally to deal with that institute.
Yeah, well, I think of also Jack Buechner and Bill Clay and John Ashcroft and Jim Talent. I mean, you can go on and on.
Yeah, I mean, John Ashcroft has a very big group called the Ashcroft Group, based in Virginia with a big office in Washington. And although they don't lobby per se, they provide high-powered legal advice to big corporate clients in many cases. And then you've got Jack Buechner. I haven't heard from, but apparently he's still up here. You have Alan Wheat, used to be a congressman from Kansas City region, and he has his own lobbying firm here in Washington. And Bill Clay Sr. lives, he's retired now, he lives in Silver Spring, which is a suburb of D.C. But, yeah, you don't see much of him back in St. Louis other than when his son is running for re-election, I think.
Yeah, that's very true. One final area let's touch upon, and that's Claire McCaskill. Now that she has been re-elected, becoming active once again in Pentagon contracting reform. How is that faring for her?
Well, she was able to get an amendment onto the big Senate defense bill a couple of weeks ago. And this week, matter of fact, is quite important because the House version of that bill doesn't have this wartime contracting reform amendment. And McCaskill is a member of the joint House-Senate conference committee that will hash out the final version of the bill. So she's pressing very hard this week to make sure that her provisions end up in the final bill, which still have to be approved by both houses of Congress. The head of the House Armed Services Committee, Buck McEwen, is not exactly a good friend of McCaskill because she's criticized him for earmarking in the past. But she's hopeful that he'll put aside any petty differences and agree to this.
And very quickly, are you hearing anything about future plans for Todd Akin, Russ Carnahan, or Jerry Costello?
You know, I've heard things totally on background. I mean, I've heard that Russ Carnahan was looking for some sort of position within the administration. It's unclear to me whether that would be here in Washington or somewhere else. But I haven't heard whether anything's come through. Todd Akin, I know, was looking for work, and I don't know. He hasn't announced anything. Jerry Costello, I've heard, might have something lined up back in Illinois, but he hasn't announced officially what it is.
Okay, well, other things to look for then. Rob Caney, thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you have a great holiday and that this business in Washington doesn't interfere with family plans too much.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you so much for being with us. You can read Rob's reports regularly at the stlouisbeacon.org. Coming up next, seasonal scams. All too often, the holidays bring out the worst in people. Back to prove it in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. In the midst of this holiday season, we'd all do well to remember that this time of year of supposed goodwill is not always shared by everyone. There are a lot of people out there who want to separate us from our hard-earned money by taking advantage of gift-giving pressures and the holiday generosities. They are scam artists. They are good at what they do, and we'd all do well to think about that and our own vulnerabilities this season as it advances. Here to help is Bill Smith, an investigator with the Better Business Bureau of Eastern Missouri and Southern Illinois. Bill, nice to see you again.
Hey, Don. Very nice to see you, too.
So you're busy, busy, busy during the holiday time, a lot of it having to do, obviously, with the season itself.
Absolutely. In fact, we've been issuing several warnings recently to consumers and businesses alike about all kinds of scams and problems with businesses out there, with bad businesses. And unfortunately, that's what I deal with is when a business goes wrong. And we have plenty of work to keep us busy there.
Well, businesses are one thing. Individual scam artists are another. Does the BBB have any traffic with individuals?
We certainly do. In fact, most of the scams are perpetrated overseas, actually, and most of the scams this time of year involve online shopping situations. We are getting calls pretty much every day at the BBB, our operators, talking to people who have been scammed out of anywhere from, you know, $20 or $30 up into the thousands of dollars. We got a call probably about a week and a half ago, and this is not uncommon at all, from a young lady in our area who had purchased an automobile on Craigslist and had paid through a cash transfer form. And I don't remember if it was a Western Union or a MoneyGram or a Green Dot Money Pack card, which is a reloadable cash card that has become kind of a favorite means of cash transfer for scammers these days. But she lost $1,800 in the purchase of a car and never got the car, paid the cash, called us, said, you know, what can you do to help me? And unfortunately, there's not a lot. She didn't the person who she was dealing with didn't give her a real name. The phone was untraceable. And in most cases, again, this would have been a situation that ultimately this cash would have ended up outside the United States.
Let's talk for a moment specifically about an example like this. What advice would you have for people who are thinking about making a significant purchase online, Craigslist, for instance?
The most important thing, and we've said this time and time again, and it's interesting, is the method of payment. It's almost always, if you're dealing with a stranger, somebody that you've not met in person, somebody that you don't know if they're with a legitimate business or not, if they insist that payment be made via a Western Union transfer, a MoneyGram cash transfer, or a Green Dot Money Pack, in each of those cases, that's almost 100% signal of a scam. If somebody is taking your credit card or a PayPal transfer or a personal check, in most cases, that's going to be more legitimate. So look at what's being required in terms of the method of payment. That's very important. Do business with businesses that you know, certainly businesses that you have heard about, established businesses. You can certainly check with our office to find out whether it's a legitimate business. We've had multiple cases recently of people, again, outside the country or inside the country, impersonating other businesses. They may, in fact, say that they are with one of the big box stores like Walmart or Lowe's or something like that, when, in fact, they are not. And they bring you to a another website that does not belong to those companies, and they can scam you that way. So you have to be very careful and make sure that you are dealing with the company that you think you're dealing with.
Is there any recourse at all against these outfits that have an overseas base?
It's very difficult. We always recommend that they talk to the Federal Trade Commission. Occasionally, and we work very closely with the Federal Trade Commission. The office in Chicago oversees the St. Louis area, and we're part of a consumer fraud task force that includes the FTC and the attorney generals in both Missouri and Illinois, and the FBI, Secret Service, a variety of other people. So we always suggest that they deal with the FTC and they file a complaint with the FTC. And occasionally, if the monetary amount gets large enough, they will go after these people. But they are honestly in many ways just overwhelmed with the number of scam situations that are coming through.
You mentioned the big ticket item, the car. But you also mentioned people being taken for small amounts, like $30. What kinds of cases? Give me an example of the $30 scam.
Probably the most common case involving a $30 or $40 online scam is somebody who would go online and perhaps be signing up for what they believe to be an application for an online payday loan. In order to do that, the company, the bogus company in many cases, will ask you for banking information because there will be a small fee that might be involved associated with it. They might tell you that, there's a $10 fee or a $15 fee, something like that, to speed the application process. What happens is these people not only take your money, but they get authorization. They began billing your credit card on an ongoing basis, and we've had people calling us that said that they didn't pay a lot of attention to their credit card statements, and they found out that they've been being billed by a company that they had never heard of. For $29.99 a month for 6 months. And again, if you're applying for something online or if you're giving information online to somebody that you don't know, that's a very dangerous situation. We've had situations where they've emptied out individuals' bank accounts in those kinds of circumstances.
You're talking about giving personal information. How much of a red flag is it when anyone is asking for this kind of information? I don't think anybody anymore would give their Social Security number online, although many probably do, credit card numbers, and even your home address.
Well, what happens is you wouldn't give it under normal circumstances. But again, if you are making a purchase online or filling out an application or doing something that an individual sitting in their home might believe, this company needs this information because I understand that they need to take a small payment out, or I'm making a purchase, and they'll take that out. What they don't understand, again, if they don't know the company and if they're not able to trust the company, they can take out a lot more money than that. So just try to know particularly who you're dealing with in those kinds of circumstances.
Any new wrinkles this year that you haven't run across before?
In terms of online shopping, I'm trying to think of – it seems like there's something new coming up every day. Again, the last couple of years, scammers – in the past, what's changed most dramatically for us at the BBB in terms of what we're hearing, scammers in the past would require payments again via Western Union or MoneyGram. As people have become more sophisticated and more aware that these are, in fact, cash transfers that are difficult to get refunds on and to track down who's at the other end in most of these cases, we are finding more and more that the method of cash transfer that's being preferred by scammers, particularly outside the United States, is this Green Dot Money Pack. And we get calls on this all the time. You can pick up a Green Dot Money Pack. It's got a small warning. You can pick them up at Walgreens, stores, Walmart stores, pretty much anywhere. And they are reloadable cash cards, and you can put money on them. And then all the person on the other end needs is a personal identification number, a PIN number, and they can then unload that money from them. And people who have not heard of these believe it to be safe. In fact, they are told by the scammer that, oh, this is the safest way of money transfer, when in fact it is not, and you should never transfer money this way to somebody unless you know exactly who you're transferring the money to.
Is there any kind of bill, any kind of a dollar figure out there with regard to how much money scammers make off with in general, or particularly this time of year?
Very difficult to know. I've heard. In fact, if you go online and look at different governmental agencies, you'll see anywhere from hundreds of millions to billions of dollars. And the reason it's so difficult to know is a lot of people are embarrassed to report this. We did a release last month about a gentleman in Jefferson County who fell victim to a scam involving a lottery situation and was asked to pay taxes and other fees associated with that. And over the course of about 3 months, he paid these people a total of $41,000 using largely Green Dot Money Pack cards. And they just kept and we actually have heard of situations in the St. Louis area. And again, these people have not wanted to come forth and be public. We've not been able to put them into releases, but that who have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars on these phony sweepstakes situations.
You know, that's almost hard to believe, given the fact that this has been going on for a long time, and these so-called Nigerian emails that everybody gets just doing exactly what you're talking about here, proposing this sort of thing. They've been so well publicized. They've been the butt of jokes. It's been going on forever, and yet people still fall for it.
Right. And they've become increasingly sophisticated. The gentleman we're talking about in Jefferson County had received a phone call initially and then was sent photographs of a home that he had won in Florida, photos of a new car that he had won. Talk to a gentleman who was very professional. These people will email you or send through the mail very professional-looking contracts. You know, you just need to sign them and pay, you know, this amount, and then they just keeping you on the line and continue to draw money out of you. And the feeling that I guess we have at the BBB is that a lot of these people are very suspicious at first. The victims are suspicious at first. But then what happens is they may send $1,000, and then the person says, I just need a little bit more. And they may think, well, I've already lost $1,000 if this is a scam. So on the chance that it may be real, you know, I'll give them a little more. So they just may lose a tremendous amount of money before they finally – in this case, this gentleman ran out of money, or he may have, in fact, sent more.
Yeah, you're listening to Bill Smith, who's an investigator with the Better Business Bureau here in St. Louis. We're talking about scams, specifically holiday scams, although it's not peculiar to any one season. It goes on year-round. I'd like to get listeners into the conversation. If you have been a scam victim, tell us your story. Do you fear that you might be a scam target during this time of year? Have you been approached? We'd like to hear from you, too. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email, if you like, at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, or you can also reach us through Facebook. So come on in. Bill Smith, everything we've talked about so far relates to online scams, and this is a relatively new area. What about those that don't involve the online perpetrators?
One thing, several situations that we'd like to talk about or we do at the BBB is be extremely careful. Malls are very crowded. Shopping centers are very crowded this time of the year. If you're struggling with a lot of gifts and maybe setting your purse down or not as careful as you should be with your wallet, it's becoming very easy now for individuals, for thieves basically to get a hold of credit card numbers, debit cards, obviously, you know, to take your wallet or your purse. My wife had always been extremely careful in stores, and I always used to kid her about hanging on to her purse. And then about a year ago, my mother-in-law, was shopping in a grocery store during a particularly busy time and said she just looked away just for a moment and looked back and it was gone. So this is when stores are more crowded and people can grab something and slip away or slip it into a phony package or whatever, that becomes a real problem. I can talk also about, you know, charitable pleas.
I was just going to ask about charities, yeah.
This has been an ongoing concern at the BBB and actually with law enforcement in our area and elsewhere. This is a big time for pleas from charities around the country, local charities and national charities, and you will get these pleas. Oftentimes, a telemarketer will call and say, you know, I'm sure, you know, in the season of giving, you could make a $10 contribution for children with cancer or for breast cancer awareness, children with autism, that sort of thing. What people need to be aware of if they're not is that if there is a telemarketer involved or a direct mail fundraiser involved, most of the money in many cases that a consumer is giving, that a donor is giving, actually ends up in the pockets of the fundraisers. We've done numerous releases about charities where 95 cents and more of every dollar that's donated ends up actually running the fundraising company, the telemarketing or direct mail company.
So 5 cents goes to whatever charity they're supposedly supporting.
And I'd like to say that that's uncommon, but it's not. That in situations where questionable telemarketing operators are working with questionable charities, We see that on a fairly regular basis.
Well, how do I, the consumer, know if a charity is questionable or not when they make such an appealing appeal?
There are several ways that you can do that. At the BBB, we accredit charities through we basically have 20 standards of accreditation that a charity has to go through to meet in order to be an accredited BBB charity. So check with us as to whether or not they're accredited. And if they're not accredited, at least check with us to find out whether they have been transparent enough to provide us and the public with the kind of information that they should be providing. A good charity is a charity that is going to be extremely transparent. And if they call you on the phone and ask for your money, they should be more than willing to send you written materials about what they do. You should be able to check that out again with our office and with other folks who monitor charity giving. Again, if you're dealing with the larger, better-known charities, you're usually in a pretty good position. But a lot of the bogus charities these days are using names very similar to those. So you do have to be very careful. If you have any questions, please call us at any time.
It's also possible for people, if they are so disposed and want to deceive, you can lift a logo offline and make your own little presentation with a genuine logo, although it could be bogus.
You certainly can do that. And in fact, we have had companies and charities that have linked, that have our logo online saying that they're accredited, that offer testimonials from individuals that have been faked. In fact, oftentimes testimonials are copied from one website to another when one will close down and open up the next day under a different name but using the same testimonials.
Bill Smith of the Better Business Bureau. We have a number of calls. I want to get to them, but rather than be interrupted by a break, we'll take the break now and come back and take your calls. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Bill Smith of the Better Business Bureau. We are talking about holiday scams. As promised, let's go right to the phones, and we'll bring in Rick calling from Brentwood. Rick, thanks for staying with us. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. 2 points. Yesterday I received an email from what would have appeared to be a FedEx delivery notification that somebody had stopped by, a FedEx delivery truck had stopped by my home and was not able to reach anybody, and therefore I needed to contact this email and our phone number to make arrangements for picking up my package. I have nothing pending. I'm very careful about FedEx and UPS deliveries, and I have nothing pending that I'm aware of, and I really think it was a scam. I think somebody was trying to get me to call or get information from me or get an email from me.
Rick, thanks for the call. Sound familiar to you, Bill?
Yeah, we've heard of many cases like that, particularly this time of the year on FedEx packages that need to be picked up. And usually what they will do is will ask you for some kind of personal information, potentially banking information, sometimes asking you to pay a fee, an insurance fee or something like that. But yes, and what we would recommend in all these cases is that what they usually do is they leave a number that is an untraceable number, a toll-free number that you can call. We would recommend that if you have some concerns about that, that you look up the number, your local number for FedEx or for whatever other delivery service it is, United Parcel or whatever, and check with them directly to see if something's pending. Don't just take the phone number or the email address that they give you.
And if I may I also ask, in 2008, when I started my real estate and brokerage and auction firm, I realized the importance of a good Better Business standing. I've been self-employed for almost 40 years, and I contacted Better Business to see if I could join or if there was a probationary status and that I was willing to pay the fee, join the organization, and maybe not have all the benefits, but at least be recognized as an individual that was willing to play by the rules. And unfortunately, I was told that, sorry, we're not interested in you until you're a year old. And yet, if I were to do something wrong, you'd be more than happy to put me on a list, which we've done. We've been in business now for 8 years, and not one complaint, nor will we ever have one if I can help it. But I just found it a little bit disingenuous that we weren't given an opportunity maybe to join and play by the rules, even if it was a probationary status or some kind of a separate designation that you could say, hey, look, this is a great organization. They're being proactive. They want to play by the rules, but we're not interested until they're a year old.
Rick, yeah, thank you. Go ahead, Bill.
Rick, we've had discussions actually as recently as this week about that very thing. And that is a national requirement. Our feeling at the BBB is that until a business has been established at least a year, we simply don't have enough of a track record to be able to granting accreditation for us is a very important step. We're basically saying that if you are accredited and have a high grade with us, consumers should be able to trust who they're doing business with. I understand what you're saying about the probationary situation, and I know that that's something that has been talked about. But as of right now, the rule is exactly as you say, and a business has to be in business for a year. I'll tell you, we got into some occasionally we get into a situation where somebody has gotten information past us. There is a recent situation involving a contracting company that convinced us, we asked for a lot of information, but convinced us that they had been in business for more than a year, when in fact it turned out that they had not been. As a result of that, we accredited this company. And a lot of people believing in the accreditation process did business with them. And ultimately, it turned out that this was not a good business and created some problems for us and our relationships with consumers. And it, while the one-year situation may seem somewhat arbitrary, there are reasons for that. And I understand your concerns, and I know it's been under discussion.
Sounds like the BBB was sort of a victim of a scam in that particular case, Bill. I guess that happens too. Let's take a call from Evan calling from St. Louis. Evan, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks, Don. I really appreciate the program. A couple of years ago, I fell victim to a scam that had a sort of legitimacy to it, and I this is the comment that I want to make or the question to the gentleman here. This was a regional bank. I won't say the name, but I get a check in the mail that is sizable, $4,500, and along with a very convincing letterhead that explained to me that through something I had signed up for, in the past, I became a winner of a drawing. And this check, which was a legitimate check, it even had the ways of spotting a forged check on the back. It's straight from the bank. It even came with a contact number. I called somebody and they picked up the phone and said, yes, this is totally legitimate. If you take it down to the bank, they're going to cash this for you. And so I went down to the actual bank and the person explained to me that this was not a legitimate check because it had been stolen by an employee at the bank and was writing blank checks to people just enough to cover applicable taxes and wherever I might be living. And he was actually giving me, a little extra money, which the person was getting the bulk of it, but even the person who was getting scammed was getting a little something out of it. I was wondering how often does the Better Business Bureau run into kind of these rogue employees that take off with the legitimate checks, that the routing number was for the routing number of the bank's lending group. It was totally legitimate.
Evan, we have the idea. We have other people waiting, too. Let's get a response from Bill to that, but thank you for the call.
Evan, that does not happen often. What happens more than that is somebody, usually a mystery shopping situation where somebody will be sent, for instance, a $3,000 check that looks very legitimate and be told to take $500 for as your own fee out of that. They'll deposit that in the bank. The bank will look at it as a and take it as, in fact, a legitimate check, put $3,000 into your account. You pull $500 out and find out that there's no money to cover that check, and then they will notify you that you are overdrawn and there's a penalty involved. So banking operations have been dealing with this for a long time, and we certainly get a lot of complaints about that. But from an employee's situation, what you described is very unusual.
Thank you so much for the call. A couple of quick emails here. Madonna writes, don't most major credit cards carry some kind of insurance against scam or loss? Meaning, can't you appeal to the credit card to credit you back should a transaction not be completed correctly?
And the answer to that is yes. And that's why we always at the Better Business Bureau recommend that if at all possible, you pay with a credit card. Now, what you have to be careful about is that that you appeal that if you use a credit card to pay for an item and you did not receive the item. Usually there's a length of time that you can appeal that. And a lot of times these companies will try to string you on beyond that period of time, whether it be 90 days or 120 days or whatever, so that you can't come back to the credit card and company and appeal that. But know what the limit is. And most credit card operations will investigate that thoroughly and put the money back into your account if, in fact, it's a scam.
Let's bring in Bob calling from Millstadt in Illinois. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question about cramming. It seems to be something that's going on quite a bit. I was wondering if you could explain how it works and then how I could protect myself.
If you're still on the line, could you give me an example of what you're talking about? Are you talking about a telephone cramming situation?
Right, on your phone bill. There's been a few articles in the paper recently about people losing over $1 million, you know, in Illinois from cramming on the phone.
I think those are phony charges that we're talking
right.
about, right, that are not explained. They're just there, and you go ahead and pay them because you think they're not bogus.
Correct.
Thank you, Bob.
I haven't, again, heard of that much money. What we do hear about
this is collectively. He's talking about $1 million.
A $1 million. Yeah. I thought there was one person who maybe had lost that much money, but
a buck or two at a time.
And they're usually small fees that they're involved in, and at some point, what usually has happened is somebody has given somebody authorization, either knowingly or unknowingly. To take some money out, and then that becomes a continuing situation. We heard an interesting thing from a gentleman who came into our office a while back whose parents had an old telephone that was in their basement that they hadn't used for years. And it turned out that this, in fact, was a rental phone that they had rented from the phone company. And there continued to be, even when this was unhooked and in their basement, continuing to be a fee that was coming out of their phone bill to pay for rental of this phone.
Yeah, I fell victim to that myself for 10 years, paid for a phone that I was renting and had no idea I was renting the phone. Let's bring in Tim calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Tim. Make it a quick question or comment, please.
Yes, how are you doing this afternoon? I was calling because I actually got a call yesterday on my cell phone for a federal government grant for $7,000 that supposedly I was approved for, and then I was given a number, a code, to call another number, and then I called that number, and then they stated that I have a choice of receiving the funds through Western Union or through a credit card or direct deposit or something like that. And then when you go to Western Union, what you have to do is you have to pay $200 and something dollars to get the $7,000. And I was wondering if you've heard anything about this scam. And these people that call have an accent as well. I'm assuming they're out of the country. I'm not really sure.
Okay, we'll get a response. Thanks.
The bogus grant programs have been going on for some time, a number of years, ever since I've been at the BBB. And that they're exactly as you described. People are told that they've usually a grant that they haven't applied for, and they are eligible for a $5,000 or $6,000 grant. And all they have to do is pay some fee or give up some information. And if you haven't applied for it, that's always going to be a scam, and you should be wary of that. In terms of the grandparent situation, I know exactly what you're talking about, and we talked about that at the BBB a lot. This situation where somebody gets a call, believes that it's a grandson or granddaughter stranded in another country. They need to wire them money in order to get them maybe out of jail or to get their car out of a lockup or something like that. People should always be very careful about those situations. And we dealt with a situation back probably about 6 months ago involving a woman who claimed that her grandson had called, and he lived in England, and she was certain it was him. And we actually made some phone calls to England to his office and confirmed that, in fact, he was in his office and not out of the country.
Are the elderly particularly vulnerable?
They are, and I think it's for a variety of reasons. Anybody with potentially a hearing disability, somebody who maybe has not seen anybody for a while and hears their voice, and they want to help. I mean, a grandparent wants to do anything he or she can do to help a grandchild, so it becomes an emotional situation, and they want to do it as quickly as possible. And I would say probably those are the people who are victimized the most.
We have a tweet here. This is an interesting concept that we've been hearing about in recent years. I just ordered a purse from Travelsmith.com that features RFID safe protection. Many purses, tablets, bags. These bags are called Pack Safe or City Safe. They protect information and have features that secure the bag in other ways, too. I'm assuming these are the bags. There's a device out there now that scammers can run past your purse or wallet and come up with your credit card information. Is this Travelsmith's kind of device protective against that?
You know what? I've not heard of that particular device. I do know that there are safeguards out there to try to keep your information private and from being accessed via scanner. I don't know about a specific company that is dealing with that, though.
Yeah. Well, time is very limited, but we're talking about the seasonal stuff. You still have things going on at the BBB dealing with the storms that we had last April.
Right. The April 28th hailstorm was a big storm in St. Louis, and it brought, as these things always do, contractors in from all over the country. I know that we received we had several people came in from the from Texas, some from Indiana, roofers and contractors from all over. A storm like that can mean a year, 2 years worth of work for them. And the BBB has had to recently issue releases involving a couple of companies that bottom line is it appears that they bit off more than they could chew, and they oversold and now are not able to get to the roofs that they had promised that they would get to back in June and July, and it may be next spring before they get to them.
Yeah. So it's a year-long thing, this whole business of people scamming other people. Bill, a lot of people want to know your phone number for the BBB, and give us that. We'll put it online for people who have it, and also your website.
Sure. We're at 314-645-3300, and we have live operators. A lot of BBBs do not. They operate via email largely, but we have several people who are ready and willing to talk to you. Our phone lines are open from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. weekdays. If you have a question about any company or anything, want to look it up, or you can also file a complaint online, you can go to www.bbb for betterbusinessbureau.org.
And we'll put that online. We'll have a link. You also have a feature online whereby people can report scams that they've been involved with. And all of this information obviously is helpful to other people who might be targeted. Once again, that number, and we'll have it online, 314-645-3300. Bill Smith, I want to thank you so much for being with us. I hope things slow down for you for a lot of different reasons over the holidays, but we certainly appreciate your spending some time with us.
Thank you, Don, and just everybody be careful out there.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Bill Nadelsader about his new book, Examining the Rise and Fall of Anheuser-Busch. A very interesting read, believe me. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.